The U.S. dollar has lost 85% of its value since the 70s, when the dollar decoupled from gold, and the government seems bent on continuing the tradition. Charlie Kirk here. From now until after the elections, the government can print as much money as they want. The last time they did that, inflation went up 9%. Gold is the only asset that has proven to withstand inflation. Invest in gold with Noble Gold Investments. You will get a 24-karat, 1/4 ounce gold standard coin for free. Just use promo code Kirk. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That's noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. Happy Sunday with the breaking news that Tucker Carlson and Donald Trump are going to be conversing instead of Donald Trump debating. We thought it was time for us to air our exclusive conversation. Well, part of our conversation with Tucker Carlson. Here's part of our conversation. To hear the entire conversation, become a member, members.charliekirk.com. That's members.charliekirk.com. To hear the entire conversation with Tucker Carlson. It's affordable for all income levels. There's so much going to be happening. We're just getting started on members.charliekirk.com. Advertiser-free episodes, so much. Members.charliekirk.com. This is going to be the coolest thing coming into 2024. So start early. Members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. As always, you can email me, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
So we're here with Tucker Carlson talking about carbohydrates.
I was going through a list of my favorites.
Yeah, people are going to say, what do you mean carbohydrates? Tucker, good to see you, man. Thanks for taking
Great to see
time.
You, Charlie.
Yeah.
So where were you? Where were you just?
Where was I just?
Like 4 minutes ago.
I was just sitting down with Megyn Kelly talking about how men pretending to be women are.
No, you were outside greeting like 1,000
that is true. Yes.
In person in the heat in Florida.
In a parking
in
garage. Yeah. Yeah. Taking responsibility for the mess. I shook every hand and took selfies with all of them. So no, I hate, it's kind of like you. I hate disorder and I hate lines. Lines for me, I think, are the worst. And we try to pursue excellence at Turning Point, and making people wait in a parking garage is totally unacceptable. And so
more.
I've gone pretty totalitarian, like fascist dictator the last hour and
that's
a half.
The spirit.
Like,
I mean,
you know, trying to
fascism
fix things.
Is worthless if the trains don't run on time.
Well, that it's all you really get is the perks for the leaders at that.
Right. No, I totally agree. There's got to be some upside.
Yeah, exactly. Like a function, like a clean society would be nice. Great summit in Iowa. What's your reflection on all that?
I don't have any especially deep thoughts other than what I've thought for 6 years now, which is that the disconnect between Republicans in Washington and their voters is like not getting narrower at all. It's really wide. The issues that Republicans in D.C. care about, they just don't seem connected to what voters think. And that's never truer than on foreign policy. You know, their obsession with Ukraine and fighting Russia. I mean, I just don't think the average Republican voter, I don't think the average Democratic voter, honestly, has any interest in going to war with Russia. But they're all dead set on it.
Did you feel that from the crowd? Did you feel the disconnect in real time? I mean, you interviewed five or six candidates.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Oh, I felt it. And, it's very tempting to play the demagogue in situations like that and like, what do you think? You know, and I don't want to do that.
That's what I would
have
done.
I do want to do that, but I stopped myself from doing that.
I would have done that within 20 seconds.
I can't. But anyway, yes, of course. I mean, there's no appetite among normal people of either party for a war with Russia. There are an awful lot of people who feel sorry for Ukraine, and I'm definitely, you know, in that group. And who feel compassion for refugees from war and have normal human and decent human responses to suffering. But, you know, the Mike Pence's and Nikki Haley's and Joe Biden's and the people pushing this stuff, they're not interested in the suffering of the Ukrainian people. They're using them, of course, and they're dying on their behalf. And I think most voters know that. It's just – and it's enormously frustrating when you see the differential in emphasis. Like they – oh, we got to seal our southern border. Really? Well, we actually have a U.S. military for that. No, they're needed in Lithuania. I mean, one of the candidates, I don't want to embarrass anybody, but said to me last night, you know, well, off camera, if I mean, came up after to say, you know, well, we disagree, but, you know, I still like you. Great. Which is, I appreciate, but, you know, we need to stop Putin here or else we have to stop him somewhere else. And I'm like, what, in El Paso? Oh, that's already been invaded. Sorry.
Or Nahalis?
What are you talking about? Exactly. And he said, well, they could roll into Lithuania, for example, and they're a NATO ally and we'd be obligated to defend them. And I was like, well, let's break that obligation. How's that sound? Because I've got kids and I don't want them to die for Lithuania. And I don't think any other American wants that. Maybe Bill Kristol, but no normal person wants that. And like, we should just exit NATO. If the cost of being in NATO, I have no idea what the upside is. I don't see any. But if the cost is fighting for the sovereignty of Lithuania, like, that's insane. It's just not worth it. And why don't you tell me how it is worth it? Well, it's worth it because we have an agreement. Really? Well, let's exit the agreement. Like, I don't understand. Are we a slave to some treaty signed 50 years ago? Like, what are you even talking about, you nutcase?
Or a slave to an ideology. And that's what I can't quite figure out. So what you've pinpointed was the confusion I had watching the summit, which was typically politicians are accused of saying to the audience what they want to hear just to get political power.
Yes.
They're not doing that.
No, it's such a smart point. They're actually not pandering, but they are pandering to their
to
donors.
Whom? Well, that's
to their donors. So, and I actually talked to one of the candidates who I know fairly well, who I think a lot of. I'm not going to embarrass him by saying his name, Vivek Ramaswamy, but he confirmed what I knew, which is, you know, he's lost a lot of support. You know, he comes out of biotech and finance, so he knows.
He was a darling of the billionaire class.
Oh, 100%.
The anti-woke.
Well, almost in the billionaire
class.
Here's
an Indian guy who talks really fast. We love him.
Exactly. How couldn't you not love him? But he told me point blank, you know, I haven't raised a ton of money because the people who supported me initially found out that I was opposed to the Ukraine thing, not because I hate Ukraine or I'm pro-Putin. He's not. But because it doesn't serve American interests. And they're like, oh, well, we're out. And he made such a smart point. He said, they're not taking money from Raytheon. There's no VIG here. They're not getting rich from supporting the war in Ukraine. They really believe it. It is a cult. They've been captured by it. And as he pointed out, he's not a Christian. He's a Hindu, but he makes a point that I, as a Christian, agree with completely, which is there's a vacuum at the center where meaning should be. And in that place flow in all these insane ideologies from, you know, the race craziness and the
trans thing,
tranny stuff. And like every bad idea fills that void, including Ukraine.
So the other part about the neoliberal project, invade the world, invite the world, is that it, if you disagree, it's unbelievably totalitarian in their response.
In the name of democracy,
no,
we
that's
must
right.
silence it, you.
It's like to preserve a free society.
Right. Well, so we're going to imprison some priests. Well, I said to Pence, I was like, all right, you know, first of all, I'm not that interested in what happens inside Ukraine because I'm not Ukrainian. Or Russia, for example. I'm not saying Russia's a better society than Ukraine, though I'm totally open to that possibility. I just don't know the answer. It certainly could be. Ukraine's pretty awful. What I object to is the lying around it. We're doing this because we believe in freedom. Well, okay, the people we're funding are putting priests and nuns in jail, raiding convents.
But he said it wasn't true because he talked to some shill on payroll of Zelensky.
He's lying, and he knows it's true. Of course, it is true. And if you pulled a little more. He was like, well, actually, they're saying bad things. They got the wrong opinions. So it's like, all right, but you're allowed in a free society to have the wrong opinions. And by the way, I would say this if they were rabbis or imams. Like, if you support religious freedom, you can't put clerics in jail for having different views. Like, period. And by the way, especially if you're a Christian leader. I mean, come on, Mike Pence. I think Pence says he's a sincere Christian, and I believe him. But like, these are Christian leaders being imprisoned by the government, and you're on the government side? I mean, it's just like, wake up. And by the way, if you're a Christian leader and you're, you know, what we really need is more cluster bombs. Right? I sort of missed that part of Matthew, the cluster bomb part.
To turn the other cheek and send
like,
them cluster bombs quickly.
Listen to yourself. I've gotten in arguments with people I love. And I remember one in particular where the person said, you know, listen to yourself. Like, if there's a videotape of this, you'd be ashamed of what you're saying. And I really shocked. I was like, you're absolutely right. I'm behaving like a total jerk. And I thought that yesterday, Mike Pence, in the name of Christianity, more cluster bombs. Okay. Hear yourself.
Blessed are the peacemakers and those who send cluster bombs.
Of course. Exactly.
That's the annotation in the original Aramaic. So that's you're hitting onto something that they're captured by their donors. But I think they're also just captured just by high society opinion.
Of course.
Which is what is their backstop if they don't become president, which is almost a certainty that they want. So then why are they running? You were with them behind and – the scenes and in public. They're not pandering to voters. This is a question I get a lot because, I mean, let's just be honest.
Like, Mike Pence is not probably going to be the Republican nominee under any circumstances. So then why are they running? Is it vanity, ego, pride, revenge?
And I don't think, by the way, I don't think Pence is like the worst person in the world.
No, I'm not saying that. But
so I felt, you know, and I woke up early yesterday and I said to myself, you're going to be in a room full of neocons. Be polite. You know, I am triggered by it. I'll admit it. That's my weakness. I'm very offended by the program, which I once supported, because it's just, it really hasn't borne fruit for America at all. It's hurt the country. So I'm mad about it. And I tried not to get mad, but that, like, turning to the crowd and saying, they don't have enough tanks in Ukraine. Prepare yourself, ladies and gentlemen. The Ukrainians don't have enough American tanks. When he said that, I could just feel my self-control just evaporated, and I snapped at him, and I'm sorry that I did.
No, it was right. But Tucker, it should give you hope. They booed him, and they weren't buying what he was selling.
Well, of course not. No normal person could.
Well, hold on. The GOP 10 years ago would have been like, yes, war with Ukraine, and while we're at it, let's colonize Sierra Leone. Like, that was that was the neoliberal orthodoxy, but something has changed. Trump helped change it. I think you helped change it on television for 5 years. You moved, at least in my opinion, did it for me. You moved the Overton window in the zeitgeist. You sense that from the voters?
I would say this is not false modesty. It is the easiest argument to make because it's just so obvious. It's like one of so many things. I mean, it's like, why do I have a moral obligation to take your COVID vax?
Why that was Asa Hutchinson.
Yeah, why is Russia my enemy? I mean, maybe it is, but like, tell me how. How many of my friends have been killed by Russia? Zero. How many people do I know who've died from fentanyl that came from Mexico? Well, in my case, two.
In Maine, there's a lot.
Yeah. Well, these people weren't even in Maine. Both of them are sort of upper income, but whatever. I mean, everyone knows someone. And so who's my enemy? The country that's killed two people I know, or the country that's killed nobody? I mean, I don't know. Like, think for yourself, okay? That's what I just – and I think once you do start to think for yourself, reach your own conclusions. That's the promise of America. I'm a free man. I can reach my own conclusions. These are not hard places to reach. Like, it's – and again, it's not about taking sides in the war, Ukraine versus Russia. It's like, what are we getting out of this? How will we know when we've won? What's the point of it? If you can't answer three simple questions, then you're not really making an argument, are you? You're just beating me over the head with epithets. Putin lover, traitor. Until I submit. And as long as we don't participate in that ritual, and it's like, you can call me whatever you want, but I'm a free man and I'm not gonna be intimidated. Like, that's all it takes to make them go away. Okay, now you've called me a racist, you call me a Putin lover or a transfer, whatever, call me whatever you want. I know who I am, and so does God. So I don't care what you say. At that point, like, they don't have an argument. So they're just like, okay, shut up, racist, Putin lover. All right. You know, I don't care. Like, you really, like, David Frum doesn't like me? Oh, gonna be hard to sleep. Don't tell my wife. Like, what?
And Billy Crystal. So the type of person, though, that it, like, the most aggressive neoconservatives, I'm not saying there was necessarily one of these people on stage, they have really messed up personal lives. Do you find that is true in the sense of their, I mean, I just think of a certain senator from a certain state, but I'm not going to say, you know.
Well, it all flows outward, doesn't it? I mean,
no, but there's a cope, it feels as if. It's like I have to recreate some other border while our own is invaded.
And I love a man in uniform, for sure. No, I mean, yeah, there's a psychosexual explanation for a lot of things, and I think there's a lot of truth in all of that. What?
No, I totally agree. They're laughing because it's true.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm sorry. No, yeah, no.
A laugh response of a human being is a recognition of a deep,
there's
deep-seated truth.
Like, if you're kind of a – look, here's how I think in very simple terms. If you have a happy life, happiness is not a mystery to you. I mean, just balance. You know, no one has a perfect life, and there are always problems. But if you're like kind of happy sitting in your living room with your wife and dogs, then you have a clear sight picture of what happiness looks like. And when you're trying to help other people, you see that as the goal. And it's peaceful and orderly and calm and stable. It's like pretty much the same tomorrow as it was today. Like, you're extrapolating forward from your own life. But if there's nothing at the center of your life, if you live your life online, if you don't really have real relationships with anybody, you've got a really distorted view of what the future should look like. I mean, I do think it's that simple. But I will say, I'm totally fixated on this. And I thought this last night. It's like, I'm probably in top 10 worst Christians you ever met. So why is it, and I'm literally like a talk show host. So why does the plight of priests and nuns in Ukraine fall to me to point out? So I said that last night to Pence. I thought it was a completely reasonable question. You're an advocate for religious liberty. You're a Christian leader, self-described. They are putting priests and nuns in jail in Ukraine, and you support it. How do you square that? National Review wrote a piece immediately accusing me of bigotry.
That was one of the sickest things.
It was unbelievable.
I've read. Yeah. And Rich Lowry. Yeah.
Yeah, like I don't really care what National Review says. Of course, I don't think anyone reads it, and I don't. But someone sent it to me. But I was thinking to myself, like, again, listen to yourself. You're attacking me for pointing it out.
Well, now you're onto something I want to mention, which is the crime of noticing. And you mentioned this with Bobby Kennedy, right? And you got me thinking very deeply about that is the thing you're not allowed to do, which is notice the obvious.
No pattern recognition.
No pattern recognition of urban crime or, as you say, public filthiness or adverse events to a vaccine or a public, open border.
Well, not only no noticing, punish the people who do. What's crazy is we're so sensitive about people's physical and psychological infirmities. I've got PTSD or I've got, whatever, all these syndromes, ADHD, which means you have trouble paying attention sometimes. that happens to me every night when I write my script. But anyway, but we're very, very sensitive about these things. But then you've got someone who's like, well, actually, I took the vax you made me take and I can't walk. it killed my uncle.
They say you're a QAnon.
Shut up! No talking!
Well, so the vaccine thing is interesting because I think people know that if all of a sudden there's a real discussion on vaccines, it's what I call a limiting belief. What else might not be true?
Exactly. Well, that is true of so many things.
Ukraine is one of those things too.
But all this stuff, it's like...
Vaccines are the big one though, because that one really has been...
For sure. And that was like 20 minutes ago and everybody's implicated in it. But all Christian leaders conspired with the government to convince their churches to take this stuff. People like Asa Hutchinson, the governors, Republican and Democrat, who got up there and did like public service announcements, vax propaganda, when they had no idea what its long-term effects would be, and they haven't apologized.
Kicking people out of the military.
It's unbelievable, but nobody's apologized. That's what blows my mind. I've made a ton of mistakes, probably haven't apologized for all of them, but the ones I haven't apologized for are the ones I don't remember, because I think it's absolutely essential – not simply to your relations with other people, but to how you feel about yourself, to have enough dignity, to have enough self-respect, to acknowledge when you're wrong. Like that's the root of your moral power. And not one person has gotten up and said, I told the people of Connecticut, Arkansas, Delaware, pick the state, to take the vax. And like some small but meaningful percentage of them were gravely injured by it. They didn't need it. They followed my instructions and it really hurt them. In some cases, it killed them. And that weighs on me. If some person would do that, I don't care if it's a Democrat, Republican, socialist, I don't care. I would revere that person for his honesty. But not one person has done that.
That's against one of the Ten Commandments, the American ruling class, though. Like, thou shalt never repent for the mistakes. When was the last time a bureaucrat, billionaire, anyone would acknowledge responsibility or take responsibility?
Well, how about the Iraq War? I mean, you could just go through the – Yeah. No one in the Bush administration ever acknowledged that, like – maybe we should have seen 9/11 coming. It's like no one apologizes for any the meaningful things.
But why?
What they do is they apologize for their ancestors' behavior. I'm really sorry about the riot in Oklahoma in 1922. I'm really sorry about taking your land, some Indian tribe whose name I don't remember. It's like they apologize on behalf of other people. We're going to apologize for slavery. Well, that ended in 1865. How many culpable parties are still alive? Let me check. Zero. So now it's safe to apologize because nobody needs to pay the price for that. But how about the mistakes in the last 20 years in American life, big history-changing mistakes, and the people who made them are not only still around, they've ascended in the hierarchy. And so like the lady running our Ukraine policy at the State Department was one of the driving forces behind the Iraq War. Like how did that happen? Another guy who ran the Iraq War wound up running the World Bank. I'm not saying they should be in prison. I mean, I feel that way. But I think we should be very hesitant to send people to prison. But we certainly shouldn't give them raises and better jobs. Like that is truly nuts. And that tells you that the system itself is broken in a way that's dangerous.
And the people who refuse to acknowledge responsibility have any sort of humility, which is a virtue that nobody has in D.C. at all. I mean, it's to be able to acknowledge that.
Humility empowers you. It's also that's the sad thing is they miss – when you say, I'm sorry, or I was wrong.
Makes you happier, too.
100%. When you tell the truth about yourself, to the extent you can see it, it's kind of hard to see ourselves, and like we're not always accurate in the way we understand ourselves, but to the extent that you can, to say, this is who I really am. Once you stop lying, you're filled with this weird supernatural power. That is totally true. And they should try that because you're not hiding all the time. Oh, man, I hope they never find out I'm an alcoholic or secretly gay or was behind the Iraq war. It's like everyone already knows. Just say it out loud. Like the people who love you will love you anyway. It's not – do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And they're so afraid. That's what I see when I see someone like Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State. Obviously, he's not up to the job. He's not, you know, intellectually qualified to be Secretary of State. He's probably not an evil person, and I'm not saying he is. But when I look at him, I'm like, that guy's terrified. You know, you hear the term imposter syndrome? Yes. That guy's living it. And so are all of these other people. They're super small people with no record of achievement of any kind. They never built anything. And all of a sudden, they're running the world, and they're scared out of their minds that someone will reveal how small they are.
Yes.
And I feel like if they would just admit it and be like, man, I can't believe we did that in Iraq, or I'm sorry we tanked the U.S. dollar. Do you know what I mean? I'm sorry we printed all this extra currency for the benefit of the finance
sector. Sorry all these kids are killing themselves, right?
Just say that. And then they would become – then people would look at them and be like, oh, wow, for the first time I believe you.
But then what is in their psychology? Where does it come from? What do we know about the type of person that refuses to apologize, only goes forward with, as you say, hyper-aggression?
Well, they don't – because they don't believe in God. So they don't think there's the possibility of forgiveness. It's a zero-sum game to them, right? So like the person who admits weakness is immediately killed. There's no possibility of forgiveness in a God-free world, period. And that's what it is. That's where their fear comes from. Whereas the people who think they're forgiven or think they could be forgiven,
yes,
or see things on a grander, you know, on a cosmic scale, they're like, you know, I screwed up. Like people do. The greatest people screwed up. I was watching the other day. I'm actually not a huge Martin Luther King fan or whatever. Super flawed guy. But I was watching the audio of the last speech that he gave the night before he was killed. April 3rd, 1968. He was killed the next afternoon. And he gave this speech. And he had just been like cheating with a bunch of different women. Okay.
Yeah. He had a tendency to.
Oh, my gosh. No, he was like sexually out of control. But he gave this speech in which he clearly predicted his own death. Like there is no doubt if you listen to this that God is speaking through Martin Luther King. And again, I don't like Martin Luther King's program. I don't like his behavior. There's a lot of, you know, worshiping Martin Luther King is absurd to me. But I got to say, if you listen to that speech, God is speaking through Martin Luther King. There's no other explanation for that. And you're like, well, that's kind of consistent with what we know. We're all flawed. The people in charge tend to be more flawed. But it doesn't mean that they're not capable of greatness. So let's just be honest about it. The second you have to feel the need to pretend that you're perfect, you become a liar and you become paradoxically even less perfect, in my opinion.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
When I grow up, I want to work for a woke company, like super woke.
When I grow up,
I want to be hired based on what I look like
rather than my skills.
I want to be judged
by my political beliefs.
I want to get promoted
based on my chromosomes.
When I grow up,
I want to be offended
by my coworkers
and walk around the office
on eggshells
and have my words policed
by HR.
Words like
grandfather,
peanut gallery,
long time no see,
no can do.
When I grow up,
I want to be obsessed with emotional safety
and do workplace sensitivity training
all day long.
When I grow up, I want to climb the corporate ladder.
Just by following the crowd.
I want to be a conformist.
I want to weaponize my pronouns.
What are pronouns?
It's time to grow up and get back to work. Introducing the number one woke-free job board in America, RedBalloon.work.